Hey guys, welcome back to We Have Thoughts. We're continuing our Conversations with Oscar series, and today we're going to be talking about Minari. But for a quick second, before we dive into this episode, this is Anna, and I would just like to extend my sincerest apologies for my blunder that happened this week. I released our episode on Thursday, April Fool's Day, and it was not an April Fool. I was the fool. I put the episode up just to make sure it was up. And I forgot to go back and edit the description. I forgot that it was in the wrong order. Promising Young Woman was supposed to come before Trial of the Chicago 7. So at the end of the episode, when you hear us talking about our rankings, you're going to be very confused. Like, what is this mystery movie? Why is it there? They haven't talked about it. So for our loyal, many loyal listeners, I apologize for the confusion and for just the emptiness you probably felt Thursday morning, waking up and seeing a new episode on your feed and being so excited and then being like, what the hell is this movie about? I don't know. So the team has talked. We've had a meeting. And the girls have graciously agreed to let me continue to be a part of this program. I'm honored. I'm forever in their debt. Thank you both for forgiving me and allowing us to move forward.
You're very welcome.
Lawsuit pending.
Lawsuit pending. So if you know any good lawyers.
Investigation. To prevent this error from happening again.
Yeah, so if you know any good lawyers, send them my way because these two are vicious. and this is not the first mistake I've made when it comes to this podcast.
Nor will it be the last.
A lot of you may remember, a lot of you, because there's so many of you, may remember very early on in our very early days, we talked a lot about this episode from Criminal Minds. It's our greatest episode we've ever recorded, and it never got to grace your ears because I dropped my phone, the high-tech equipment in which we were recording on. And when I caught it, I hit delete. And the hard work that we had just finished was gone in an instant.
We almost killed you that day.
My life almost ended.
Some tears were shed.
Murder almost happened.
Would have prevented this mistake from ever happening. But, you know, you can only look back.
And done an episode about us.
Yeah, exactly.
Hindsight is always 20/20. So I just apologies again. I will try so much harder in the future.
I appreciate that apology. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very sincere.
So, moving on. Today we're talking about Minari, and it's how many six nominations? One for Best Picture, Leading Actor for Steven Yeun, Supporting Actress for Yeo Jung. I can't read my writing. Yeo Jung-yoon. I couldn't tell if I wrote a Y or a J for her last name. I apologize. Directing for Lee Isaac Chung. Original screenplay for Lee Isaac Chung. And original score, which I did not write down.
Emile Mossuri?
Oh, I read his name. I heard his name earlier.
Emile Mossuri?
Masseri? I think it's like French. Masseri?
I don't know. French. It's
Masseri. I'll just say it with a question mark in the end. That sounds French.
Yeah. So this is our discussion. Again, I'm Anna. You've heard my voice now for almost 5 minutes. These are my other co-hosts.
I'm Crystal.
And I'm Joy.
Let's get into it, folks.
Okay. So when Joy and I watched it, we watched it through A24's website, so we were very lucky to see Alan Kim do, like, an intro to the movie. And he got to say, like, thank you for watching it, thank you for supporting the movie, thank you for blah, blah, blah. And, like, right off the bat, we were, like, almost crying.
I was like, okay, so is that a child?
He's been added to the list of children actors I am now adopting.
Yes.
Yes.
100%.
Like, you know how we felt about Jacob Tremblay back in the day, how he was our son? I feel the same way about him.
Yes. Yeah. And for the little boy last year from Jojo Rabbit.
Oh, Rowan Griffin Davis?
Yes.
Yes, I believe his name.
Oh, the other one. What's his friend's name? The
Yorkie. One.
Yorkie. Oh, oh God. I can't think about him. I'll cry.
All the baby also, actors. Add even
Sonny Panwar, who's like the cutest little boy ever.
Also, oh, Sonny.
Anyways.
Absolutely. And his sister in this movie. Is that Noel? Noel? Noel. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to fire myself now. It's been great.
The wine is kicking in.
Cheers. Noelle Cho. She was fantastic.
Yes. Oh, my God.
The sister, oh, my God. She was so good.
Actually, there wasn't a bad performance in this.
No.
Not a one. Not a one.
Solid, solid ensemble. Solid. It's, everybody.
This is one of those films that makes me wish that the ensemble was... there could be an ensemble award at the Oscars. The Oscars.
I really wish. Yeah. I really wish.
I think...
I don't know.
I mean, I believe they're nominated for the SAG.
Yes.
So that's good. But I believe
SAGs.
Yeah, I think there's Sunday actually.
Sunday? Oh, okay. Yeah.
Oh. We're not gonna podcast about it, but we're just gonna chat about it. Or, we'll tweet about it. We'll tweet through
we'll
it.
We'll tweet definitely.
Sorry, I liked your laugh there, Joy.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just gonna say my first note, because it's the first thing you notice about the film is the score.
Yeah,
same scene.
So beautiful, and it was immediately swept up in it, and I was like, "I'm in." I don't care what kind of story this is. I don't care if I don't know what the story's gonna be, but I'm invested already.
I was revamping my notes yesterday. Last night, I was like rewriting stuff, and I listened to the score while I was doing it, and it put me in such like a relaxed, calm mood, and I found myself like stopped. I would stop writing and just kind of like think and like remember stuff and just kind of like. Recall memories, and that's what this the score I feel gives off is like a memory, much like movies, is very much like a memory. Yeah. It's beautiful.
I listened to the IndieWire podcast with Lee Isaac Chung and the composer Emil, and oh, it was so good because I didn't realize this, but this is one of the few movies where the score was done before the film was shot. And so Lee Isaac Chung gave Emil the screenplay. And so off of the screenplay, that's where he was picking up the sounds and the music and everything.
Wow.
Yeah. And so then Lee Isaac Chung was like, I had this really great privilege to be able to, on my way to work, on my way to shoot the film, I had the music playing. And so I had that inspiration ready for whatever we were going to shoot. And I was like, oh. That's just genius, and I don't know why more people don't do that, but I feel like that definitely added another layer to how good the direction of the film were.
I also think that speaks to how strong the screenplay is.
Oh, yeah.
Because
he was able to pull all of that.
From just the screenplay, and I think for lesser screenplays, it's what you're talking about, is where they need to be there, they need to see the film, they need to see what's being shot, because so much can change.
Yeah.
But when you have a strong screenplay, I think they feed off each other. Sorry.
I agree with that. Yeah. I think also because those two, they get each other, they understand each other on like a personal level.
Mm-hmm.
So he was able to tap into, they were able to tap into each other's brain and like, here's the score, here's this, that, the other.
Yeah.
Everybody gets inspired by just when they write a score. So like, I get why more people don't do that. Mm-hmm. But I think in this instance in particular, it was good because they just, they're a team and you can feel it.
Yeah, because he said that when they first met to talk about starting the score for this, they weren't talking about like, oh, it needs to sound like this or it needs to sound like that or we need one for this scene or whatever. They were just talking about like what art was influencing them, like what they really liked, talking about like home and stories and their past and nostalgia and all these other things. So it was so effective in creating that feeling and creating that memory, that like feeling of home, because they connected on the emotion of it rather than just like the technical aspect of it.
I love that.
I was really worried because in the beginning they show, little David, like, sick. And I was like, if this is a sick kid story, I don't think I can do it.
I said the same thing.
I was really scared. Because I really didn't know anything about it, the story, before I watched it. I just remember hearing about it, like, crazy from Sundance 2020.
Yeah,
last year. This is another one that I've, like, been waiting forever to see.
A whole year.
So I was really nervous about, like, oh, my God, this is a kid. I'm going to have to, like, I don't know if I can handle this.
Step out.
But it wasn't, so that's good.
That's how I felt whenever they were talking about, like, the grandma, and then the grandma ends up having a, was it a stroke? Something. Mm-hmm. She had, like, an illness, and then I was like, I swear to God, if the grandma dies in this, I will just leave the living room. I'm not gonna watch this. It was so, oh, no. I'm so glad. Spoiler, nobody died. Oh, yeah, everything was great.
This spoiler podcast, by the way, in case you didn't know.
You should know that by now.
And if you care, I mean, if it bothers you, then get the fuck out.
She said.
She did say.
So I know this was like a drama, but really it was a comedy. Still hilarious a lot of the time.
What did he say? I'm not pretty. I'm good looking. Yeah. Oh my God.
He talks about how, like, the water of the mountains.
Yes. Mountain Dew. Like, oh, what is this? Oh, it's water from the mountains. Well, it's good for you.
At church, she takes out a $100 bill from the collection.
What a grandma move, first of all. Oh my God.
That's so funny. Or that, like, what's not really funny. Well, I guess it kind of is when her mom finally comes in. She's like, she's crying about spices.
Oh my God. I feel that. I feel that. Yeah.
I'm so cute.
I'm like, it's just not the same. I love that moment. It was so cute. Best supporting actor, David Kim. What's his name?
Alan
Kim. David is the kid's name in the movie. Yeah. Alan. If this were a different year where it wasn't a stacked, like, I don't know, maybe even this year he could have gone in.
Kids don't really get nominated, and I think that's a problem, because there's some really good kid actors out there.
And I feel like the adults in the film are reaping the benefits of the kids' performances.
Oh, definitely. Oh, my gosh.
Because had that been any other little boy in room, I don't think Brie Larson's performance would have been as beautiful or profound.
And he is the lead of that movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we podcast about it, so you can listen to it if you haven't. But, like, he is the third part of the movie. It's all him. Like, she's not even on screen for, like, anyways.
That's how I felt a lot about this, because everyone was talking about Steven Yeun's performance and things like that. And I was like, nobody mentioned that the children were, like, the majority of the movie.
Do you think they should have, like, a young actor movie?
Yeah, I mean, they do in the BAFTAs, don't they? The
BAFTAs have, like, a rising star, so it's not specifically for a role, but kind of, like, someone they think is going to do great things later on.
What was the one where Alan Kim won? Which one did he win?
He won the Critics' Choice.
The Critics' Choice.
It's accepted.
Yeah, when he started crying, I was like, I haven't even seen this movie, but I'm crying.
He was like, is it real? He's like, pinching his cheeks.
Oh, and now I get that. Oh, fuck. At first, I thought that was just really cute, but oh my God.
We're all in lacrosse.
I came into the podcast knowing this is how it was gonna go, so I'm not surprised.
It's so sweet.
We just really love kids. Like, these kids are so cute. So precious. And they're doing such a good job.
It's so cute. Oh, I just want to hug him.
I know. Oh God.
But also how cheeky he was. Like, when he goes, "Grandma, how did pee taste?" I was like, "You little shit! You little shit!"
It was a comedy. It was a comedy. Veiled as a drama. What the hell was this?
And he brought in that little leaf. She was like, you win.
It was so good. So good.
I love the scenes between Grandma and David.
They were the best. They were so good. It was such a nice, it was such a pleasant contrast in compared to, like, the parent scenes or the scenes with the farming and things like that.
Grandma sees David a little bit differently than the parents do. Right. She kind of sees, like, what he's going to be.
Right.
So she kind of treats him that way. And so it's just a really beautiful moment for them, their banter, and, like, it's
just, their whole relationship was just perfect.
Because she's the first one to not treat him like he's fragile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was important.
In the beginning of the movie, I really like how the establishing shots, so everything of like when they're getting to Arkansas, when they're like seeing the house for the first time, and what's his name? Jacob, the dad, right?
Yeah.
Jacob's going out and checking the land and all of that. Everything is seen through Jacob's perspective, and it's so like filled with promise and optimism and like what could be and the potential that there is in this land for the future that he wants, for the success that he wants. And it's so idealized, and it's so interesting to see the contrast of that to once they're inside their home, and it changes to the perspective of his wife, Monica, right?
Mm-hmm.
Monica, and then everything is just like very still, and like the camera work changes a little bit because it's now like, okay, so outside was the beautiful, pretty, woo, nature, and inside it's like, this is what you're actually going to be living in.
So, this is not what I was promised.
Right. Like, he's head in the clouds, thinking of his dreams, thinking of the future. And she's like, well, what about the right now? Like, we got to take care of the kids. We got to live with the kids in here. So.
And I like how the movie doesn't paint the parents as villains against each other. You know, they have points. They're valid, you know.
Yeah.
I can totally understand his dream to want more for the future. But also, like, I get her too, like, honey, listen, this is where we're at, boo. Like, we got to figure it out. Like, I love it how it never feels like they want to choose sides.
No, it's not like there's no like antagonist to that. Mm-mm. It's pretty fair for them.
Like they're on the same team, they're just coming at it from different angles.
Yeah.
But back to what you were saying, Joy, about that the first few moments of them on the farm, there's that shot, that scene where the man comes with his fancy stick to come find the water. Oh, yeah. That, and I'm going to steal a little bit of your thunder here with a shot.
shot.
But I have an obsession with those days where the sky is the perfect shade of blue with the grass and the trees perfect shade of green. And there are two colors that shouldn't like go together, but they look so beautiful when it's perfect. I have a whole Instagram post about them, about that last April when I went on a much needed, I need to get out of my house road trip. I'm just obsessed with that, the perfect blue and the perfect green. And that's what that shot was. And I was just like drooling. I was like, I need to be in that field. I need to be laying there amongst that perfect green with that perfect blue. Obsessed.
Yeah, it made you see it from his point of view because you were like, well, I want to live here. This looks great.
Right?
Like,
yeah.
I would totally leave my city life and go live there.
I'm already obsessed with Arkansas, minus them being Arkansas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Arkansas, right? You love Arkansas.
I do. The nature. It's so beautiful. It's the natural state.
Yeah, it really is. I find it very interesting that typically in immigrant families, you have a household where it's multiple generations under one roof. And in people in particular who have immigrated to the U.S., it's not wrong and it's not bad for the kids or for the family to stay in the house together. They're not like in the U.S., like, you turn 18 or you graduate from high school, you graduate from college or whatever, and you should be out of the house by then, you know? And I really like how they were able to show that in the film. Because obviously the kids are like, no, we don't want grandma. Grandma smells weird. Like, I don't like this. But their slow realization to be like, wow, what a fucking gift it is to have grandma here in the house with us. Especially after she gets sick and like, David wants to take care of her and wants to like make sure she's okay. It's so interesting. And I don't usually when I see that in like films or in TV, it's kind of painted as a negative, like, oh, you have too many people in the fucking house. Like, this is a disaster. It's chaos, blah, 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 whatever. And even though it wasn't like always smooth sailing with them here with this family, for the most part, it was like, it was a good thing. It was a positive. It wasn't. After they got over their initial hump, it was like, no, this is good. We function better together as a unit, as working together. And they don't lose their individuality because they're together and functional.
I my grandmother moved in with us when I was about 8 years old. Yeah, because it was right after my horrible walking into my empty house situation. I was dropped off by a friend, and my family should have been home. All the lights were on, the TV was on, but they had run out to go grab some dinner, to go pick up some fried chicken at Church's Chicken. And so I came home to a house that looked like it was alive, and there was no one there, and it scared the shit out of me.
Nice.
Thought my family had been taken. Anyway, so it was not too long after that, after I'm crying and freaking out, that my grandmother moves in with us. And she took my room, so I had to move into what was our second living room. So it was split in half. Half of it was the piano and the big family computer, because we had a family computer. Those were a thing, children. There was one computer for everyone, and it wasn't a laptop. It was large. So there was a large-ass desk that took up, like, two whole walls. I'm not bitter. But anyway, so I had to share my room with the family room so that she could have my room, because my room was connected to the bathroom. So I wouldn't give up that time that she lived with us for the world. Like, now that she's gone, I'm so, so grateful that we had all those years where she was with us. And there's something very special about that.
This reminds me a little bit of, I don't know if you ever saw Farewell.
No, I haven't.
It's well, I'm not going to spoil it for you. It's really great. You should watch it. But it also reminded me of, like, appreciating your grandparents and why they're there, and do your best to utilize their time on earth while you are with them, because, like, they can teach you so many things and they have so many stories. And anyways, yeah, so watch that movie. It's great.
Oh yeah, I did have a note here that said, if grandma gets hurt, I'm gonna hurt somebody. Literally, I will fight anyone.
I like how this is, it isn't a story about being an immigrant, it's about a family, and they just happen to be immigrants. I really, really like that. I mean, it's, I the whole thing about it being a foreign film is really ridiculous, because it's not that at all. Like, mm-hmm. It's just, it's not.
Yeah.
I really liked that.
Yeah, we are doing so good this episode.
We're doing great. Look, the fact that we can, like, recognize, okay, pause, your turn. Go for it.
I was going to say, fuck.
You were going to say that?
I was. No, I remember now. I went into it thinking it was going to be an immigration story, a story of how they came over and bought this land. And they were determined to make it work because of the journey they just went on. And it was, to an extent, but that was not the main part of the story. Yeah. So I was very surprised that it was just a very typical American family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's what it was. And I think that's what, especially with a lot of the reviews I was reading, that's what resonates with a lot of people. Because anybody can connect with this family. Anybody can see themselves or family members in any of these characters, because you have the mom and the dad, and the dad's really trying to do something and get their family to a better station than where they're at now. The mom is just trying to, like, survive and keep the house together. The oldest daughter, God, every time she was like, no, David, be careful, I was like, do you know how many fucking times I've run after kids and been like, no, you're gonna get hurt. Literally, that was my job.
Seriously.
I felt so seen by that little girl.
Shout out to all the siblings.
And then David, who's just, like, so young, and he doesn't understand yet, like, the full extent of the consequences of his actions, and, like, how he initially behaves with his grandma, you know? And then you have grandma, like, she's lived a long life. She has a lot of wisdom, and yeah, she's kind of, like, messing around with the kids and giving them shit, but, like, it's okay. And so it seems like such an insult to be like, this is a foreign film. Like, bitch, watch it. It's about America. It's about a family.
Yeah, they speak another language that you don't speak. That doesn't mean it's foreign.
Exactly.
It's literally about people in America.
Literally!
Like, what?
My grandmother was the person I called when I got home and no one was there. She was living at my aunt's at the time, so I called her, and she was like, have a party, call some friends, get them over. She was like calming me down. She was like, don't worry, like, have fun. What are you doing? Don't worry. And then I was like, okay, mom's here, I gotta go.
Have a party.
It's so funny. This movie made me think about that a lot, because I like called my grandma, and I was like, the relationship that we have now, like me as an adult, and that she can talk to me differently now, and there's certain things that she doesn't have to like shy away from telling me. I was like, this is so funny. I never would have thought, I like, we talked on the phone the other day, and I was like, I never would have thought that my grandma would have been like, yes, go get the vaccine. You need to be partying in Cancun. You need to be going to Puerto Vallarta. You need to go out and have fun. And I was like, I just literally never really thought that you would have told me that. Coming from such a like the background that we have, being like so religious, mm-hmm. and the family's conservative and whatever. But she was like, no, go party. You should have fun. And I was like, all right, grandma told me to. So I got to book my flight. I got to go get to a beach. Let's go.
Listen to her.
Oh, darn.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. It's just really interesting.
I think the only time that we are, as an audience, are like, these people are not from here, is when they go to church. And you see the white church, and they make them stand up and like, oh, we have visitors. It was like, I was thrown back of
God. I like cringed so hard in my seat. I was like, ooh, like, I felt this.
When I used to go to church and they'd say, okay, say hello to your neighbor. That's literally the worst thing in my life, because I'm really awkward and weird. So like, I would turn to my left and the person would be talking to their left. Turn to my right, they were talking to their right. So I'm just like, okay, so do just like, okay. So I'd wait for someone, like looking around like this, for someone to look at me. So I'd go, oh, and then I'd shake your hand. Okay. And then I'd stand there. I hate that. Talk to your neighbor. I don't want to do it. I would dread it every Sunday.
Me too. It was we would turn to our neighbors and shake hands and say, peace be with you. And I liked it because it was the point in Mass where I was like, oh, we're getting to the end. We're almost done. But that was the point where it was kind of like a nice break in the middle of everything, where you got to stop and your family all stops and like kisses you on your cheek or whatever. But yeah, I hated turning towards my neighbors and being like, peace be with you.
Like, I forgot how to shake hands all of a sudden. I forgot how to look at people. I was so... I hate it so
much. It's the worst.
That was so it's like, I thought, did they talk beforehand? Did they say, turn to me first? Like, did I miss that meeting? Like,
is it choreographed? Like, is everyone supposed to go your left first or like your right first? Or is it like by row? Or like,
yeah, how does it...
They didn't let us know.
Yikes. Anxiety kick. Terrible. So when that happened, I was like, oh.
Silence.
Daisy Chung and Steven Yeun.
Oh yeah, so I'm sure, because you haven't done trivia in a while, Anna.
You haven't.
It's harder to do with newer movies.
That's right, true. Yeah.
Because there's still a lot coming out about them. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest, I have not been doing my homework so well.
How dare you?
I know. I've been, my nose has been right up in them books.
You know it's bad when I'm doing my homework.
And I'm not.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Quick, we still love you, obviously.
Quick sidebar. I read 10 books in the month of March.
What a nerd.
And I finished my 10th book yesterday, or on the 31st, and I logged it, and I was like, I'm so accomplished. I feel so good about myself.
Are you going to get a pizza party now? Because you have so many books.
Girl, I had pizza last night.
Yeah.
But I did. I got on TikTok and the first video was like, here are the 12 books I read during the month of March. And I was like, you son of a bitch. You bastard. I was feeling good until you opened your fucking mouth.
Gotta get on it, girl. My trivia is that Lee Isaac Chung and Steven Yeun are cousins by marriage.
Shut up!
Which they didn't even realize until they were because I think Steven Yeun was like, yeah, I think I met him one time briefly at someone's wedding, because it's his wife's cousin. Okay. It's like I met him one time, and then like I met him with it for the movie, and then we're like, wait a minute, you know what? So yeah, they're related to White Man.
Shut up. That's so cute.
And they talked about like how they both grew up Christian, both of them. So a lot of the themes in the movie are not directly based on scripture, but it's influenced by scripture. Like it's similar to when he says, like, you know, it hurts, but it also heals. That's similar to the
ouch.
In Job 5:18, it says, for he wounds, but he also binds up. He injures, but his hands also heal. So a lot of what was in the script was influenced, because he says, like, you know, it's like we're maybe not as practicing as we once were, but the basis of us is that. So everything that we do outwardly is through that lens. And so, because that's very similar to me, I related to all of that they were talking about. Very interesting.
I love that. That's so cool.
Yeah.
I think it was just with the last one with Nomadland that I was like, it hurts, but it also heals. That's how it feels.
You wrote that on one of your Letterbox reviews.
I think I did.
This one. Yeah, because they say it in the movie. Or it's written somewhere or something. I can't remember. But it's similar to that, the Job 5:18, which the last time I have not wrote scripture in a long time. So sorry, God. My bad.
Oh, it's because it's almost Easter. That's why.
Huh?
It's because it's almost Easter.
Yeah.
When is the Lord?
Surprisingly, the Catholic Church is not. You're not going to find the Catholic people being like, well, in Jeremiah 57:82, it says, we're not Bible people like that, which is, I think, weird.
And it's funny because, well, I don't even know what to say I grew up as. I guess just Christian, because, like, it was non-denominational. So it's like, whatever. I don't really know what that is. But I was very much like, memorize these scriptures, memorize this. This is it.
Oh, yeah.
This, blah, 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 blah. It's always about, like, and I'm terrible at memorizing things, which is hilarious to me.
That's why the verses never stop.
When I would have to memorize, like, scripts and stuff, I could do that, which is scripture I couldn't do.
One kind of script, yes.
I went with my friend a few times, like, on the weekends. I would stay the night at her house, and she went to a Bible church, like, and that was bizarre to me. It's like their church is just they would have like a normal Christian non-denominational service, but I would go to like her Sunday school or her youth group, and they would just like talk about the Bible.
Yeah,
well, that's how mine was.
Yeah,
I guess I went to Bible church. I don't know.
I feel like it's a little bit of the same thing, you know. Like I went to a Baptist church for a number of years in high school, and it was very similar, except the praise and worship was just a lot more like boring.
Oh,
what's that?
Nothing.
Did you burp?
I might be taking apart Rocket's toy.
Oh my god!
And I wanted to see if it would work.
Yikes!
Well, now we know.
He's very interested. Very confused. What was I saying?
Oh yeah, the Baptist. It was very traditional. It was very like
hymns.
Hymns. There were a lot of hymns, and it was, you know, whatever. But then I went to non-denominational. It was more like, you know, singing and dancing and praise and worship, blah blah blah. It was a lot more hip, I guess.
Contemporary.
There you go. So it just
those concert churches.
Basically, yeah. But it just felt like. But the core of what they were talking about was exactly the same. So
it's weird. As I get older, I get nostalgic for like those things that I didn't really care for when I was young. Like a couple weeks ago, I went on like a deep dive search. I was trying to find one of the hymnals, but I was trying to find it in Spanish because I remember, weirdly, my grandma singing it.
Oh,
I could not find it for the life of me. I don't know if I have to like go back to Mexico and find one of the churches or something.
Let's go to Mexico and buy a book of hymns.
Okay, I'm down.
Oh my god!
I just find one in the valley.
Yeah. Well, I'm probably gonna go down in June. So.
Oh, nice.
I'm gonna go see if I can find one because I'm like I can like hear the melody, but I can't hear the words. So I'm like, I need to find the book. I don't know what number it is, but I know that it's in the. I remember reading the book.
They need to remember, like, practice it and perform it.
I'm not performing it for anyone.
If you sing it, maybe I'll know it. I remember a lot of our church.
I'm good.
I mean, not right now. Oh. I wouldn't ask you to do that. Because I respect your privacy on these here podcasts that we record.
Our one listener is not going to care.
Besides the fact that I completely inhaled incorrectly, so now my voice is shot.
Oh, yeah. I had to breathe.
Breathing went the wrong way. You know what, Anna? I was going to tell you this. The exterior nature shots reminded me a lot of Pride and Prejudice.
So like dreamy.
Everything was so rich and dreamy and romantic. It was
luscious.
Lush. And like you wanted to walk through there. You wanted to take a turn about the
that
room.
That movie is really beautiful.
It was so fucking pretty.
I've only seen it the one time. I did like it. I don't know what I was to expect, but Anna was like, just watch it. I was like, okay.
It was an important moment for me.
That was a pivotal moment.
If you would have hated it, I would have been like, we would have been okay, but it would have hurt. It would have hurt me deep down in my soul.
I was like, okay, they got some chemistry. The score is amazing. The shots are. Oh my God.
Everything. That's another one of those ensemble, SAG ensemble award.
I think I remember going, oh, I see you. I understand.
That hand flex, I get it.
Okay.
Oh my God, the hand. Okay. Not the movie we're talking about.
Sorry, yeah, no.
Okay. Shots time.
Shots, everybody!
Okay, I did watch a couple of interviews with the cinematographer, and the wide shots, the reason why they look so dreamy and so pretty, it's because they're all like, they're all trying to, what do you call it, establish the scale of what he's doing, so you really get like the fullness of the earth, the richness of the farm that he like really, really dreams of. I don't actually have any specific shots other than the ones that we've talked about because everything was just so pretty. I just couldn't tear myself away long enough to like write a note. I was like, my eyeballs need to stay glued to this movie. I can't look away. It's just so pretty. It was really interesting that he was talking about that he leaned into the harshness of the light because obviously it's like the middle of summer and they actually shot this in Oklahoma, not in Arkansas.
Oh, okay.
But obviously like a summer in the South is going to be pretty fucking hot. So it was interesting to see how like it was, the heat was kind of, it looked like it was imposing on them, but it wasn't like it's normally expressed in movies. So it was just a little bit toned down, a little bit softened. Because it wasn't about like, oh, the land and the struggle and the ouch. It was more like the internal struggle.
Oh, so it wasn't. The ouch, yeah.
I'm so glad it wasn't about the ouch.
It was so about the inside ouch.
Look, ma'am, I feel that inside ouch, so shut up.
We all do.
The other thing that he said that I thought was really interesting is that him and Lee Isaac Chung had spoken about earning a close-up. That there's not a lot of close-ups in the film. Ooh. And the most of the beginning of the movie is a lot of wide shots. And most of the interiors of the house are wide shots trying to get everybody in the same shot, trying to block everyone out so that you see everyone at the same time. And the only time, one of the times that you get a close-up is when the parents are having that argument on the roof. Right before they go back home when they're in the city visiting David's doctor. And then towards the end to what happens after that and a couple of like grandma here and there because it was all about earning the close-up, being able to rely on the story and rely on that more so than just, we're not just going to do a close-up just because we can or just because it's typical for right now, but you're going to wait until it's earned. And I thought that was just such a great idea. Again, the direction here. What the fuck?
Yeah.
This year is so good for direction. It's so good.
And I love that because he wasn't even in the conversation until a couple of months ago.
Ooh.
And like this came out like a wide release and everyone was like, oh my God, yes, throw all the words at it. Like they were so ready to give it something.
Yes.
Oh, that's great. About earning a close-up, I love the idea of that being a punishment to the actors. Like, no, you have not earned your close-up. Work harder.
Oh, man. Everything. Oh, so they, there's one of the tracks of the score that's titled, like, Garden of Eden or something.
It's beautiful.
Yes, it is. And it goes back to that, like, romantic, lush beautiful place that you really want to be. And that's what it looked like. It really looked like what the Garden of Eden could be. Because everything was so, like, visually enticing and just, like, just like the score and the cinematography and the screenplay and just everything in general was so gentle. And it was like holding your hand, guiding you along through the story. It just felt so nice.
Joy, I would like to compliment you this season on saying cinematography. The growth here is, is beautiful.
Yeah, I'll save my cinnamon for the actual the Oscar night. It's going to be special.
How I feel about the score paired with the movie, with everything, cinematography, I had a lot of similarities to Moonlight to me. How it was, especially listening to the whole score last night, like it's the whole way through, it's like, it's the movie without the pictures. Do you know what I mean? And I feel that same way about Moonlight. How is it? It's a piece of the puzzle, yet individually it's just as striking and beautiful and fantastic.
It really is. Yeah. It's so good. And it comes together so well. Like all the pieces are perfect. Everyone was doing their job and more. Like it was so fucking beautiful. And
I
was
like that.
So sad, but so happy at the end.
Right. Exactly. Right.
It was both.
That's life, man. That's how life is.
Yeah. And so this felt the most like realistic, I guess.
Yeah. And I love that. Young Jung Yoon is the first Korean person ever to be nominated for an acting Oscar. That's amazing.
Wow.
That's broken nuts. Ground. And then Steven Yeun also is the first Asian American.
Wow.
Again, oh my God.
Amazing, but also bullshit.
Yeah.
About time, bitch. I'm
trying to be positive.
Yeah. This is good. I think, who was it? Ooh, I just read someone's tweet earlier today. Maybe. I don't know. Anyways, someone was just saying that. I forget her name. Lorraine Toussaint? I don't know. She was the actress on Orange is the New Black on like season 3 or something. I cannot remember her character's name. Anyways, she was talking about how it's so great that like we're breaking all this ground. We're doing good things. And like you're getting people of color, more people of color being represented in like film and media. And she says it's good, it's a bittersweet win because like yes, I'm glad that you know we're finally getting this representation, but at the same time it just shows us like how slowly everything has moved and how little has been done to get to 2021 and we're still here.
Like when one of us wins, we all win situation.
Yeah.
But also like
how has it taken this
how
long?
Many years has this been going on?
What is this, the like 90th something Oscars?
Yeah. And I think we're finally seeing the change of the Oscar voting pool that the huge change up they did a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. It's finally happening. So it makes me hopeful for the future that, you know,
we'll keep seeing good stories about this.
And of course, the men are going to be the ones who reap the benefits first, because that's how it is. Mm-hmm. So hopefully next year, in the coming years, we'll have some women of color up there and roles just as great, just as enticing, just as interesting, just as engaging.
Yeah, because those men of color dominating the best actor and the best supporting actor categories. I want to see that. As well as director. I want to see that for the best actress and best supporting actress.
Yeah, I mean, category. The directing categories with the two women is also good.
Is amazing.
And because Chloe Zhao won for, what was it, Golden Globes? She's supposed to win. That's amazing. She'll be the first of that, of her to win.
Chinese American.
Right? Yeah. That's great.
But, the first woman of color win and the first woman director win in like 30
since Catherine Bigelow
years.
I remember that year.
Oh.
Since 08.
Why was I thinking
since
of
08, yeah.
I Catherine Bigelow. I totally skipped her and I was thinking of why do I want to say lentil? It's Yentl.
Barbara Streisand.
No. Yeah, Catherine Bigelow is the only other winner, and that was like 08, yeah.
Dang. That's nice.
And she was a white woman, though. But whatever, she won. Do we want to go through the
category?
Nominees?
Yeah. Okay, so best
picture?
I guess it can stay.
Absolutely.
Best director, Lee Isaac Chung.
Yeah. This category is so, so difficult. Good. It's so good. Like, there's only one I haven't seen yet.
I just.
And I'm like, I'm in a three-way tie right now for best director.
Best actor.
Yes. Girl, yes. Yeah. He's great. He's great.
We know who's going to win that category, but honestly, it could be the fact that my two faves, well, three faves, because I love Chadwick Boseman, but like Riz Ahmed and Steven Yeun, like, I can't believe it. I just can't believe it. I'm so happy. I love it so much.
They did that.
They did.
Oh, Glenn. Way to go, Glenn.
Every time I think about Glenn and Steven Yeun and like that cast, they were such a close-knit family. Back when the show was good, the show is shit now, but whatever.
Are there any? Oh, yeah, I guess there are two originals. Okay.
Daryl and Carol.
And it rhymes.
Yeah. I think, and Daryl, I love Daryl, but like, I don't care. after Carl died, I was like, well, if the kid dies, then I don't care. Carl. Probably a bad sign. They probably should not watch this anymore.
Yikes.
And then Michonne left too, so I'm like, why don't, she was the only one that was like relatively interesting.
Yeah, if Michonne left, then.
Although her last episode, couple episodes were really good. Anyways. Okay, best supporting actress. Also, yes.
Okay, best supporting actress.
I mean, I agree, but also Yuri Han.
Yuri Han.
She was 100%. Fantastic. She was fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I would have put her in best actress. 100%.
I believe it's Yi Di Han. Yeah, she. I agree. She should be a best actress because she was great, and it was her performance is so. Soft and subtle, but it's so important.
Yes.
It's a good yin to like Steven Yeun's yang. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's hard because, like, I think you said it before, like, the Oscars don't really like to recognize something unless it's flashy.
Yeah, they tend to go for the flashier ones, which is annoying, but.
But also, like, talent.
I know we talked about it already, but Frances McDormand, hers is it's a quieter role too.
Yeah.
So. But she's also
the movie's
that's
about
flashy
her.
For her.
That's true.
You're that's right, because it's the opposite of what she would normally do.
You're right. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, Anna. Thank you.
You're right. There she
she's
is.
So smart.
She's so smart.
What other?
And then best score.
Oh yes.
First of all,
agreed.
Yes.
Yes, I think it should be here. I guess. Oh well. The only other nominee in score is Mank, so I'll wait to talk about the scores when we talk about Mank. Okay. And then best original screenplay. Yeah.
Okay, especially because this is, like, original, that makes it even better, and fucking shit.
The category is so good.
Oh, mine is one of them is bleh.
I unfortunately didn't, but it's very well written, though.
I mean, yes.
I unfortunately didn't get to read this script, but I'm going to seek it out, and I'll post it on the post of the podcast,
but I think because it's original screenplay, it's just clearly like Hollywood's just wanting to adapt a bunch of shit, whatever. So I think original screenplay is. I want to be more particular about that one.
Yeah, but I mean this category though, like.
Oof. I know.
If you get a chance to read any of these scripts, guys, please do it because it's
stacked.
I think we agree to be in all its categories. Do you think any other than actress, any other awards she got nominated for?
I would have put it down for cinematography.
Okay.
It's not.
It's Judas, Mank, News of the World, Nomadland, and Trial.
I'd swap this out for Trial.
Yeah. Girl same. For sure.
Yeah.
For sure, for sure. Because I don't know how many, angles in a courtroom, cool. That's literally what I thought of when I saw this. And I was just like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding?
Yeah, that movie is not what we talked about already, but that movie is not a picture movie. It's more of like a word movie.
It's a word movie and it's an actor movie. It's not a picture movie.
No.
It's an Aaron Sorkin movie.
There you go.
Now, why don't you put that in the description, Anna?
That's the only thing I'll put in the description.
That's it. That's all you need.
Good, bad. It's an Aaron Sorkin movie.
Oh, man. So do you want to do our rankings?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay.
I'm going to go first.
Is anybody else ready?
I am.
Then Crystal, you go.
I forget to do that.
Okay, so we've said this before. We're all in the same boat. My, like, three, four are interchangeable. Because they're all so good. But as of right now, in this moment, number one is Judas. Number two is Promising Young Woman. Number three is, number three is Minari. Four is Sound of Metal. Five is Nomadland. And six is Trial of Chicago. That'll probably change next episode, so just be ready.
That's how this goes.
Again, my top three are interchangeable. One, number one, Nomadland. Number two, Judas. Number three, Minari. Four, Promising Young Woman. Five, Sound of Metal. Six, Trial of the Chicago 7.
Nice. sorry, I didn't know what else to say.
Stacked. Nice.
Stacked, bitch. My top two are interchangeable. I think.
I just like so many of these movies. I'm sorry.
They're all really great. Most of these are really great. Okay, so my number one, just because of the day, today is Minari. Number two is Judas. Three, Nomadland. Four, Sound of Metal. Five, Promising Young Woman. Six, Trial of the Chicago 7.
In case really, you didn't know what that movie was called.
I thought you were talking about Trial of the Chicago 9.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for clarifying.
That was last year.
No, that was Get Out.
Yeah, this... I mean, we'll talk about it later when we do the last movie, but, like, there's something in these movies that I like in every single one. Like,
yep.
There's not one I'm like, get this hell out of here.
I also think this year, because it's been such a dark and dismal year, that having this to look forward to and doing this and, like, having this award season has given these movies, like, a special sheen to them. Like, yeah, we get to have it.
Let's do this together. You know why? Because we're all in this together.
I wish that I could see Anna doing this.
You learn that dance, Joy?
Yeah, you did.
I only know, like, that one part. Kind of.
I know the whole thing.
Of course you do.
I'm not even lying.
You know.
I
used my cousin as an excuse. Well, Sienna, do you want to learn this dance? I'll learn it with you. Sure.
Four.
Wow.
Excuse me.
Sorry. Anyways.
Throw your hands up in the air. Okay.
Thanks for listening, guys.
For hanging out.
Yeah, this has been fun.
We'll be back with, I don't know, maybe Anna will fix something. We'll figure it out. Who knows?
We're not really sure. We're just going to toss it up in the air and see what lands.
Playing it by ear, baby.
Yay.
Yo.
Bye.
Bye.